chanting voices on and do the Metta Sutta. I suppose you do it in English, right? Okay. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unbending with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, and may all beings be at peace. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Just as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. So I was told that I can do half an hour talk, followed by half an hour meditation, or half an hour meditation, followed by half an hour talk. But I cannot do half an hour meditation, followed by half an hour meditation. Sad. So who is in favor of half an hour meditation, followed by half an hour talk? And who is in favor of the other? Okay, so half an hour talk first, it will be then. Now I have to think something to talk about. I thought it was only kind of like 5 minutes or something, but half an hour, why not? So, when we chanted the Metta Sutta, actually, there's this passage where it always makes me laugh because it says, radiating kindness, to all beings, omitting none. And at some point, Ajahn Brahm said, omitting nuns. To the nuns, he said. He said, is that a better translation or something? Anyway, it's always funny. But yeah, it's nice to be here in the Cambodian temple. It's been a while since I've been here, because usually, as I think most of you know, I live in Bodhinyana Monastery. And it's also very nice in Bodhinyana Monastery, but it's different because over there we have, I think it's like 30 monks now. Yeah, 30, 30, that's a lot. Over here, it's just two monks, and the other day it was just only me at lunchtime. And that is actually what makes it nice, because in Bodhinyana, you're sort of as you're just one of the monks, and if you're not there, people might not even notice. And you're just one of many. And especially when people come and bring the food, it feels different, like when they bring the lunch. When people come here, and when it's just one or two monks and you're one of them, it feels really humbling and really special, because they come not for 30 monks, but just for you and another monk, or maybe just only for me. And that makes me feel really happy and humbled at the same time, but also happy because I see people sharing with one another. And the Buddha said at some point, I can't remember exactly, but he said something like, if you understand the Buddha's teaching, then you would even share your last bit of food with another living being. It's this idea of kindness that we just chanted. You share your food with another living being, even if it's the last bit you have. That's what the Buddha said. And so if I see people doing that, then I think, these people understand the Buddha's teaching about generosity and sharing. As a monk, it's sometimes unfortunate, you know. You have no money and you cannot cook, so you cannot share physical things with other people. And that is sometimes makes me, yeah, not annoyed, but like, I'm missing out in a way sometimes, you know, because I used to like to give stuff to people as well, like homeless people and stuff. I gave them food and money even when I was a poor student. That was like, if I met homeless people on the street, and I would always have the determination that I would always give them some money, or invite them to go into a shop and buy something. So I always kept some money aside for that. And even just reflecting back on that makes me happy. But now I can't do that anymore. But I can share stories about my life, teachings of the Dhamma, things that I think I've understood, and things that I think may be of benefit to you all. Because I'm a monk, you're lay people, but we are much more similar than we look on the outside. We look different, but on the inside we are very similar. Because all of you here in this room came here to meditate, and I became a monk to meditate. And the reason for meditation, I think everybody comes to meditation not because they think their life is perfect, that their minds are the best minds ever, but because they realize that there is something that they can improve in themselves or in their minds, or let me put it differently, that they want to find some more satisfaction or happiness in life, or less distress. The Buddha's teachings are all about moving away from suffering, and that's why we meditate, to move away from suffering. And suffering isn't really different when you're a lay person or a monk, because suffering is just an aspect of life that we all share. And that is why I love to be here with you, because we all have these beautiful intentions to move towards more peace and more kindness. And I hope that you also remember that for yourself as well. And especially also when you're meditating, as we'll do later. Because sometimes you might come to Buddhism and meditation with some intention to find more peace. But when sometimes you meditated for a while, you can forget why you started meditating. And it sometimes can become, I don't know if you recognize this or not, but it can become more like a task, or you set certain aims because you've heard these teachings about certain states that you can achieve and you're gonna strive for them and try to get them. And sometimes when you sit down in meditation, already from the outset, you create problems because you set certain aims of trying to find something. And the Buddha's teachings are about lessening suffering, but the way to do that is not by running away from suffering, but by lessening our desires. You have less desires, you will get less suffering, is sort of a simple summary of the Buddha's teaching. And that it also applies to meditation. Meditation is where the Buddha's teachings can really come alive, and you can see these things directly, instead of just reading them in a book or hearing them from somebody like me. You can see if you desire less, you'll get more peace, you'll be more happy. So in meditation always, I advise you to keep that in mind. So when you sit down, I'm not here to strive for anything, like striving in the way of trying to get something. That's not what we're doing. It's about learning about ourselves and letting go of our desires, letting go of our not only our desires, but our anger or frustrations. And anger and desire and frustrations, they all have things in common because they're all about a certain time other than now. When you're angry, you're usually angry about something that happened in the past. Somebody did something to you, you're angry about that. Or you might even be have ill will towards something you did yourself or something. And desire is usually about the future. And so what these things share is that they are not about the present moment. Yeah, ill will is about the past. Usually desire is about the future. So the way to get rid of most ill will and desire is be more in the present moment. To just be with what is and find some peace here. And this is a very safe place, super nice people. So why would we want to be anywhere else? You can just be here. That is all you need to do, in a sense, in meditation. Just be here with the peace you'll find. And let the peace grow. Now, of course, always when people talk like that, it sounds much more easy than it actually is. But in a way, that is all you need to do. Of course, in meditation, we find all sorts of obstacles. And if there wouldn't be obstacles, then in a sense, there would be no Buddhist path. You know, the whole Buddhist path is there for us to overcome the obstacles and to find peace. So it's normal to have these obstacles, and in a way, the whole Buddha's teachings are about removing these obstacles. And the Buddha's teachings, I don't know if any of you have ever read them all, but in the Pali Canon, if you put all the books together, And it's like this big, so many teachings all about finding peace and removing these obstacles. Basically, what that's what it comes down to. Of course, it goes into also other things, but that all comes down to the path. When I say there is so many teachings, just so you're, no, okay. Apparently, it's normal to have those kind of problems in my mind, because otherwise the Buddha wouldn't be teaching so much. And if it was simple, then there would just be one simple instruction. But it's not like that. The mind can be quite complicated at times. But in a sense, we create all the problems, in my experience anyway. In meditation, we create a lot of suffering that is unnecessary by trying to, as I said before, trying to achieve things, but also trying to get away from things. Well, earlier I said in meditation we let go of things, but be careful with those instructions, because sometimes when people are told to let go of things, they turn it into almost a kind of ill will towards the things that are present, and they try to banish them from their minds. Maybe there's thoughts going on in your mind, you can have all sorts of thoughts, you know. Maybe angry thoughts that you don't like, sexual thoughts, thoughts about random stuff, daydreams. And you might think, oh, I sit here, I should be quiet. I shouldn't think. Go away, you stupid thoughts. And if you do that, it never works, does it? Unless you have a special mind. I've never met anybody for who that kind of approach works. And there is this, my favorite story is from the Jatakas, which is a collection of Buddhist texts, and it is about the demon in the king's palace. Ajahn Brahm also tells the story quite often, so some of you will have heard it before, but I also love it, so I'll tell you also. There is a palace in ancient India, and in this palace there lived a wise and kind king. The king was always very kind to his the people in his country, because he always treated them with respect, and the king never went to war, unlike all other kings in the neighboring kingdoms. And the king lived in this beautiful palace, where he had a beautiful throne, which was only for him to sit on. One day, the king was going out of the country on a peace mission, because he was a peaceful king, to talk with the neighboring countries about ending wars. What happened though, when the king was away? There was this ugly demon walked into the palace, and the demon was as big as a man, with horns, you know, and sharp teeth, and he was stinky and all red and with boils on his skin, and he walked in the palace. And the guards were like, oh no, you demon, you don't belong in the palace, get out. So they got their spears and tried to hit the demon, but the demon was supernatural, so he just walked right through. And all the servants in the palace were also, go away, demon. But what did the demon do? He didn't go away, of course, otherwise it would be a very stupid story, but he sat down on the king's chair, on the king's throne. Poof, right there. And that really upset all the people. There should not be a demon on the king's throne. So what did they do? They started throwing insults at the demon. You stinky, stupid demon, you should not be on this throne. You don't belong here. You get out. You don't deserve to be in this palace, and you shouldn't be on the king's throne. And with every word that they said, the demon got bigger, and the horns got longer, and his teeth got more sharp, and he started getting even more stinky. But the people, the more stinky and big the demon got, only got more upset. And they said, go away, go away, you don't belong here. And the guards tried to stab the demon with their spears. But that only made the demon even bigger. And soon the demon was so big, he couldn't even fit in the room anymore. It was just filled the whole room, this demon. But luckily, luckily the king came back from his travels. And he was a wise king, as I said, a kind king. And he saw the demon, he saw what the people were doing, and he immediately understood what was going on. So he went up to the demon, this stinky, big, vile demon. You can imagine, yeah. I saw Lord of the Rings once, there was also this big demon in it, when I was a big person. And it's like that, yeah, you shouldn't be in a palace. But what did the king do? He said, welcome in my palace, you beautiful creature. How can I be of service to you? Do you maybe want a cup of tea? Do you need a blanket for the cold? Or maybe can I fan you or give you a foot massage? Or what would you like? I really appreciate that you're here. And with each word that the king said, the demon grew smaller and got tinier. But soon the demon was back to his original size when he walked in. But the king didn't stop there. The king continued and said, you beautiful creature, please stay longer, don't go away. I can give you not only tea, but also maybe something to eat, you know, whatever I can do. And the demon kept shrinking even smaller, smaller and smaller and smaller. And soon he was only the size of a little baby. And he was getting smaller still, smaller still. His horns were only as big as a needle. And the king still kept going and stroking the demon even. What happened? Poof! The demon disappeared. And the king was able to sit on his throne again. And this is a simile for how we treat with, or how we treat our minds sometimes. We have thoughts going on in our minds. Ill will, certain desires, whatever, and we are like, oh no, you don't belong in my mind, get out. You should not be here. And if you do that, what happens? It only grows bigger. Instead, it's paradoxical, but instead you'd like, okay, you emotion, you thought, welcome here in this moment, welcome in my mind. I allow you to be here. We chanted before, kindness for all living beings. So also kindness towards ourselves, towards our own emotions. And I don't know exactly why that works, but it always works. The emotions just lose their grip on you when you approach them with kindness. And soon they will poof, disappear. And this is not just a teaching that I've heard many times from Ajahn Brahm that I've many times realized in my own life, but I also learned that even in many forms of psychotherapy, they are now starting to realize that this is a very effective technique to remove even depressions and things like that. Certain forms of psychotherapy, people come all depressed, and of course they don't want to be depressed. So they're like, oh, this depression should go away. Doctor, can you help me? But what those kind of psychotherapists do, they start not by giving all sorts of tools to get rid of the depression, but by letting the people see also there's values in their depression as well. and I won't go into too many details, but they basically learn people to accept the way their minds are and to love themselves as they are. A large part of depression is self-blame, self-criticism, and not liking who you are or what you've done. So if you start by acceptance, then actually that's the opposite of depression already. So it's a bit paradoxical. You accept something, let it fully be, and then it actually disappears. Or at least it loses almost all its grip that it has on you. And if any of you is struggling with depression, maybe not now and maybe sometime in the future, then you can use this, but it also, of course, applies to meditation. So, and you can also allow your sneezes to be, by the way. Torrents. But it also applies to meditation. You know, you're sitting there thinking, and you're like, are these thoughts, they're bothering me, they should go away. But that never works. Instead, just let them be. And let them accept them as they are. And they lose their power. So that is a few reflections that I would like to share with you, and that you might be able to apply in your meditation today. So when we meditate in a moment, then first of all, to summarize what I said, first of all, remember why we're here. Yeah? To find some peace, and not just to achieve anything, because that will just create more problems if we have that attitude of I want to reach this or I want to get rid of that. Second of all, the way to find peace is through acceptance, kindness. So I hope that was helpful, and I suggest we now all meditate together in silence, and maybe if after half an hour of meditation, then maybe if you have questions, we can still also do that if you want. I will ring the gong in a moment, and also again at the end, so you all don't have to worry about the time. Just when the gong rings, that is, will be half an hour. I see you're all grabbing the paper. What are we doing here now? Oh yeah, okay. It's been a long time since I chanted this one. Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration. Through the goodness that rises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nibbana in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge, unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord, the Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled. So, thank you everybody for meditating with me. So earlier I said, just to recap a little bit, that meditation is largely about acceptance, because if we don't accept where we are, we just create more ill will, resentment, and that never works. It's like the demon in the king's palace, the only, your problem only gets worse. So always start with acceptance of whatever is going on. And then, of course, the Buddha didn't only teach kindness and acceptance, he had many techniques. So there's many ways that we can calm our minds and find peace, but always incorporate kindness and acceptance as one of the main ingredients. That is advice that I would like to give you today. Helps me anyway to remember. So that's it. If anybody has any questions, I'm happy to stay for a bit longer. I've got a question for you. What is the threefold bliss actually? I don't even know. We just chanted, attain the threefold bliss. Does anybody know what that is? I know this chanting is not from the suttas, it's actually from the Chai tradition, but yeah, okay, maybe I'll look it up what that means.
Would you like to give us a blessing?
Well, we just gave each other a blessing, didn't we? This is for all living beings, spiritual teachers. You say you gave me a blessing already then, but I also, where is students here? Through the goodness that arises from effect is may my students, it's not in there. Yeah, anyway, I would like to give you a blessing. Sabaroga venimuto sabasanta pavanjito sabavera mati kondo nibuto chato vanbava sabitio vivajantu sabaroga venamuto. Kidi ka yuko bhava abhiva dana sili sanicca buddha pachayino chattaro dhamma vadanti ayuvano sukham balan. So that is ayuvano sukham balan means for your long life, beauty, and strength and happiness. And Ajahn Chah once said, oh, that it's a little bit hypocritical, because how can you bless somebody both for long life and beauty at the same time? That opposites, he said. But I interpret it as inner beauty, because who cares about outer beauty, right? Anyway, thank you for being here.
Arahan samma sambuddho bhagava buddham bhagavantam abhivade. Svakato bhagavata dhammo dhammasambuddhi. Supatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho sangham.